Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchlist.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined, as always, by Nick Pollock to go over these weekend starters and the starters for next week. And before we do that, Nick, I just wanted you to give a little plug or explanation about the list, because the list has changed at this point in the season.
Massively. It is a behemoth of an article. It's essentially every single start the rest of the way for every single team, as well as me putting them into buckets of like, generally, yeah, these are auto starts. These are ones that you usually just do it. There are ones that were Tobys and bombs, and then you have the cherry bombs, right? And then you also have the early streamers and the late streamers and like one game or so, and then the ones that you don't want to start at all. And that's for every single rotation. So what's really nice is that you can actually map out your playoff weeks really effectively with it. It's just, look, the list is not the same. It is not a list of the general talent. And I feel like if you run the simulations of the season, this is what's going to happen. It's now very schedule dependent. And then they're the ones that like, yeah, you're not going to drop them at this point. Like, what do you need from me? And you're not trading them. You're not dropping them. Like, just start them. And if you want to decide between two of those in the same tier, honestly, it's up to you. That's why they're all in the same tier, guys. Go check that out. On Monday, you'll come out again. Huge thanks to Kyle Bland and, of course, Josh Mockenstern for putting together a lot of those tables for me and helping me sort through all of it. It is a lot of words. I think that was the most words I've written in an article here, and I was exhausted. But it should help a lot. And really, that merged with this podcast should make you incredibly prepared for what's ahead.
Yeah, and that's just a good general reminder that as we go over the schedule for this weekend and for next week, especially if you're in head-to-head formats, if there's a pitcher who you might not start for 2 weeks, that might be okay to move on from that pitcher, even if you wouldn't have moved on from that pitcher in, say, June. Exactly. And we are now at a point where the schedule in these matchups matter more than the overall talent of said pitcher if you're not going to use them in your lineup. So we're going to start in the AL East with the Baltimore Orioles. They continue against Boston this weekend, and then it's Cleveland and Toronto over the weekend. And Nick, I do believe Saturday is missing from that schedule, so we should go ahead and put that in there. But it's going to be a two-start week for Trevor Rogers next week. It's going to be Cleveland and at Toronto. And so that's something that we really like. I'm curious, Nick, with these other guys, with Brandon Young, Shane Baz, you know, Bradish, are you seeing these as streamable matchups?
Yeah, so with Kyle Bradish, it's just been so frustrating. Are you going to have the curveball and the slider? And like, I just don't really know. I have him now down to questionable start for all of this. It's up to you. I think there is still at least quality start and win potential for this. Even when you don't have the, you know, the 8 strikeout games from Bradish, you can still get a quality start in here, right? With 4 or 5 strikeouts. With Shane Baz, the curveball is really good. In some games, it just doesn't go well with, say, the cutter or the changeup helping enough for the four-seamer. But I feel like he's in a better place than he was in the beginning of the year. Again, it's about your situation. I need a good term for a guy with a long leash, essentially. I know I've kind of associated that with a Toby a bit, but it's not quite the same. It's a little bit different. Brandon Young just looked much better yesterday. And that opens a door against the Guardians, because that is a better approach for him. Sorry, a better matchup for him against lefties, because I like his left-handed approach a lot more than his right-handed approach, where he has the splitter that he can really work with against lefties. So Trevor Rogers also, it's just so funny. You have a bad game and then you go into Coors and you have an amazing game. They're like, oh, of course. Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. But then you remember, right, these guys have these skill sets and they just kind of do what they do.
Yeah, and Trevor Rogers is one we tried to figure out a lot earlier in the season as well. The Red Sox, who are playing against the Orioles this weekend, then get a really nice schedule next week. It's the Angels and the Royals. Sonny Gray and Peyton Tolley right now are guys you have to just kind of use whenever they're on the mound. Keep an eye on Sonny Gray. He's scheduled to go after Saturday, Friday, but they did push him back from earlier this week. So not yet locked in on that Friday start against the Royals. We'll need to see what they do. It's two-start week next week for Patrick Sandoval. And listen, I would not chase this because Sandoval has been questionable for his results and his performance in recent weeks. However, if you are really in need of wins, it's against the Angels and against the Royals. There is a good chance that Patrick Sandoval, who has been pitching far more than 5 innings in these outings, there's a good chance that Sandoval will pitch long enough in both of those games to qualify for a win. And the Red Sox should conceivably give him a decent win chance against the Angels and the Royals. It's super risky, He has not pitched really well, but if you are in deeper formats and you're streaming for wins, that is the one scenario where I think that Sandoval might be in play for you. I would try to avoid it if I could.
I would tell you that you should actually go for Brian Baio instead of Sandoval. I think that what they're doing is they're piggybacking Baio a lot with Sandoval. Sandoval's ratios are just notoriously throughout his entire career have just always been bad. And it's really been about the changeup in the slider. And I think that Baio, even though he didn't do well in that one inning his last game, he was piggybacking with Patrick Sandoval. And I would be favoring that instead because I think it's just, again, too risky with Sandoval. Bennett looked good, by the way. And we're back into probable start with him, which is cool. Ranger Suarez is not looking good, like, at all. He is so out of rhythm right now. He has been since the IL stint. And I'm in that moment saying, like, hey, guys, you don't feel like you have to keep holding on to Ranger Suarez.
Yeah, they're going to need to get that right. There's not a lot of options behind these guys. The Yankees get the Padres this weekend, and then it's Colorado in Yankee Stadium, and it's the Mets. It's going to be a two-start week for Cam Schlittler. Most of these guys are going to be guys that you're pitching regardless of matchup. Max Fried will pitch on today, Friday, against San Diego. So by next week, we'll have two starts off the IL for him. So I think that he should be good to go, especially against Colorado. I will say I do have some general Max Fried concerns the rest of the way because the bone bruise on his elbow, which has popped up twice this year, it was not from a traumatic event. It wasn't from getting hit. It was from hyperextension of the elbow, which caused the bone bruise when he was pitching. Obviously, he's going to continue pitching, and so there's a continued risk of that. And so I could see a world where the Yankees, in these final starts down the stretch, say, hey, we're not going to push you too much in these starts. We want you to be healthy for the postseason. Yeah. So if you can give us five good innings, I think that might be good. Now, that is my speculation. We have not seen that play out yet, so I would not react to that. It just wouldn't surprise me if that's a strategy the Yankees take.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a really good point, Eric. And it's a case where if you have Max Fried, you're going to keep doing it. We can just hope for the best. We're going to see Will Warren actually piggyback with Max Fried today. And I would rather have Will Warren than I think Max Fried, because I think they'll probably limit it before five innings are done for Fried. And it is just something to monitor. Absolutely. So right now, if you have him, you start him. Otherwise, good luck.
Yep. The Rays, they get Texas this weekend, and then it's Atlanta and Houston next week. Currently not a two-start week for anybody because the Rays are going to keep this six-man rotation. So Freddie Peralta will get the first start against Atlanta, but it'll be Ian Seymour getting that Sunday start. Curious, you know, if you've seen anything, the last two starts from Freddie Peralta have been better, decent. Curious your thoughts on him. And then also Griffin Jacks had a really poor first start against the Mets, but the velocity was good. And he said that he felt healthy. He just had only had one rehab start. And so I think that he mentioned that just like pitching in game situations is just very different than like throwing bullpens and whatever. And he wasn't sharp.
Yeah, Griffin Jacks, I know that I have him as probable. It wasn't good. It's still ill for a reason. Still is a law for over years. I think I came that up like 10 years ago, when it was called the DL, and it was the DLH, the Disableless Hangover. I'm very happy that we changed to still ill. And Griffin Jacks got that out of the way. Okay, fine. He at least was up to plus 60 pitches, which means you likely will see something around 70 or so. And I'm just going to say, yeah, he still has his stuff. It's just a little bit different, and I think that should be fine. With Freddie Peralta, yes, exactly what we expected happened. The Rays were like, yo, more changeups. And there is something to be said that maybe Freddie Peralta just needed to throw it more with his four-seamer to then say, great, this is just what I'm doing, right? Freddie Peralta over the years has been, four-seamer is always kind of there, but then what are we going to get? The slider, the curveball, the changeup? And the Rays have been like, you are just going to do the changeup more, and I don't care if it works or not. They've really allowed him to get that runway with it. So, or really the reps, I should say. And it does make me wonder if actually this is a better Peralta now who understands this and can be more consistent with the four-seamer changeup. That said, it's really just the first time we've seen it. So at least he's not do not start now, Freddie Peralta.
Sure.
It's questionable. and we're going to take it from here. If it's another replication of the same kind of locations and execution, it's then a lot more encouraging for after that.
Yeah. And this wasn't strictly the right on right changeups that we thought, but just more changeups in general. And again, that's it's working. It's fine. Yeah. The Blue Jays, they get Kansas City this weekend, and then it's in Sacramento against the Athletics and home against Baltimore. It's two start week for Dylan Cease against the Athletics and Baltimore. We don't really care that Dylan Cease is going into Sacramento. You're going to use him there. We do care that Jose Soriano and Jameson Taillon are going into Sacramento. I don't see how you can use Taillon there. Soriano is tough. I know he's, you know, being inconsistent for us, but it's tough to throw him in Sacramento. Right now, to me, Cease is the only Toronto starter I feel really comfortable using.
Absolutely. It's pretty much as straightforward as that. Max Scherzer, I know, just had an amazing outing. It was such an outlier and an anomaly. It's great. It's cool. It's awesome. I really didn't see much of anything that was different from the other games, and it was just a really good two-strike rate and put-away rate to get so many strikeouts. So Soriano is a hipster. We know that. I will note Dylan Cease is losing velocity, is a little scary, and there's nothing you can do. So good luck.
You can't do anything about it. Cross your fingers and hope. Moving to the AL Central, we've got the White Sox. They're against Minnesota this weekend. And then it's home against Pittsburgh and at St. Louis. It's two-start week for Davis Martin, who came off the IL. Again, was not pitching well before going on the IL. I think this is a two-starter that you need to avoid. We've talked about trusting Sean Burke perhaps a little less than we did, like, you know, over a month ago. But these are two pretty good starts, Minnesota and St. Louis. And the Minnesota and St. Louis starts, the next two starts out, are why Anthony Kay is firmly on the streaming radar as well. But I'm with you on probably avoiding the rest of this rotation.
How cool is it that Anthony Kay is a thing, Eric? I know. How cool? Everyone was like, shut up, Nick. All right. Look, Sean Burke is still figuring out his secondary command again. That's everything with him. And I'm not quite at auto start again. But yes, as you mentioned, these are two good matchups, and Anthony Kay, right, is that kind of streaming option. Everyone else here, Davis Martin, Fede, Castillo. Oh my gosh, Cantillo, what have you done to me? Luis Castillo, geez. And then, yeah, it's just none of these guys that I want to go with whatsoever. It's really just Burke and Kay.
Speaking of Joey Cantillo, the Guardians. They have a doubleheader this weekend against the Tigers. So it's four games against the Tigers this weekend. And then they have six games next week, Baltimore and Minnesota. That is set up for a two-start week for Joey Cantillo, Baltimore and Minnesota. How confident are you in that two-start week for Joey Cantillo?
Ugh, man, it felt like such a weird moment where everyone was just dropping Cantillo, even though like it was a rain delay start and it was just all these weird situations. And then he had a 7-walk game quality start with his terrible changeup command. I said, well, he's never going to have that bad changeup command again. And he didn't. It still wasn't great. And he's not getting whiffs with it anymore. And all of a sudden, things have gone bad for Cantillo. So I think in a 15-teamer, I'm going to go for it because it does not mean that he's just donezo now. At least he's at 93 miles per hour on the four-seamer. And the curveball is still going for strikes. But my gosh, he allowed that home run to Vlad Jr. that like, that was such a bad curveball, and so many of those were just hung in the zone massively. It was a very bad game. So I really hope he adjusts from that. It's not out of the question. Parker Messick, Evan Williams, as you know, is good. Tanner Bibee, I don't even know if I should have this as a questionable. It's just the endless 15-team hipster thing of like 12-teamers, you really shouldn't go for it. And 15-teamers, I get it because you get the length and you have the opportunity. But man, it's the same story. You know, just you never know if it's going to be anything decent.
Yeah, and that's tough this time of year.
Tanner,
what's also tough this time of year is relying on really any of the Tigers starters. But decent matchups coming up. It's Cleveland again for four games this weekend. Then it's home for Minnesota and home for the Rockies. That's two start week next week for Troy Melton, Minnesota and the Rockies. We certainly like that. I'm curious because the matchups for Jackson Jobe are good, right? It's at Cleveland. It's home against the Rockies.
Yeah.
But the results just have not been there. Like, is this wait for 2027? And frankly, have you seen anything from Jackson Jobe right now that makes you optimistic for 2027?
Actually, you say that, and I say no. no. Jackson Jobe is... he's a piece, really. It's like, you see this stuff, and you go, man, this should really work. But there's something about the execution of it that I really want to do a deeper dive in some fashion on the guys like Bubba Chandler and Jared Jones and Jackson Job. And I even want to put Jansen Junk in there too, of these higher stuff guys who are just not getting those kinds of results that you expect, that kind of whiff ability. And even though their command isn't really like that bad, maybe it is showcasing control versus command. It's a great exhibition of this is why we say those two things separately. And right now with Jackson Job, I can't tell you that he's going to have a great start. He just hasn't showcased it. He hasn't showcased he can get whiffs and utilize his secondaries effectively to really match with the four-seamer. I don't know if I want to even hold him right now, even though it is rocky road later on. And it's just, I can't tell you.
Well, remember, my presentation topic for First Pitch Arizona is that we're looking at command all wrong. There's certainly an avenue where we could work something like that into.
Who encourage you?
I always pitch a couple ideas to like you and Eno and Paul and whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, what's best for a presentation?
I shouted. I was like, right. Command.
Yeah, that one. I will just say, I'll Keeter Montero. I have always been, or this year, I have been a fan of Keeter Montero as kind of like a deeper league streamer because he does have good command of a deep arsenal of pitches. Cleveland, Minnesota are his next two starts. I think that those are totally fine, preferable for like a 15-team league, but in a 12-team league too, I think that I could talk myself into those starts.
Yeah, he's a whip god, right? Like he is someone who is going to be flirting with a one whip this year, which is bonkers for how many innings he's thrown. I think he's like 130 now, something ridiculous. So fine, but you're not going to get strikeouts. There is not a great ERA floor there. And you also do have Drew Anderson who, dealing with the DA and his split change is finally doing well. It's possible that he can go that four seamer split change approach. Effectively, it's kind of like a mini Gausman almost. And against the Twins, possibly, like there's a very small chance that he could steal a rocky road start. Like, for example, you have Andrew Sears going right now. If they decide, maybe that doubleheader, we don't do that. Or they have a way to space it out effectively to have Drew Anderson go on a Monday versus the Thursday. But Monday versus Sunday. Probably not going to happen. But against at least the Twins, I would consider that for a 15-teamer with Drew Anderson. And Troy Melton, I know it just wasn't as great, so fine. Framber Valdez, probably I'll upgrade that from a do not start against the Rockies. I meant to do it. I don't know how I skipped that one. I guess too questionable just because I do it with the Cleveland Guardians start too, but it's also just, what are we doing? What are we doing, Framber? You got like, I don't know, four starts left to save your season? Please, for all of us.
Yeah. Has not gone particularly well, but yes, against Colorado, I believe in upgrading that start. Yes. The Royals, they got Toronto this weekend, and then it's Arizona and at Boston next week. It's two-start week for Noah Cameron. And would you know it, Nick, apparently in the middle of July, Noah Cameron started calling his own pitches, and that coincided with him pitching a lot better. Shocker that a pitcher who made it all the way to Major League Baseball, in particular, a pitcher who made it all the way to Major League Baseball on the back of command and pitch sequencing and not dominant stuff, because we know Noah Cameron doesn't have dominant stuff, would succeed by being able to call his own game. I will die on the hill that if Major League pitchers want to call their own game, they should at least be given the opportunity to. And if you want to revoke the privileges because they have like five starts where things are terrible and they're not sequencing, fine. But I believe that Major League pitchers should be given the opportunity to call their own game if they want to.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it should be the default, and it's not. And I had a whole conversation with Eno on The Craft just the other day. It's out now about sequencing and just how I feel like it's never going to be solved because it's not it's very much of a interaction. It's about the hitter and the pitcher. It's kind of the way of like poker is solved, but every situation is nuanced. There are extra information that you have to pull into this where you can have the mathematical probabilities, but that's not necessarily what you want to be doing with sequencing. If you have a 1% chance of something succeeding, a 99% chance of failure, and you can also say it's a 50-50 chance of success or failure, right? Because it's either right or it's wrong. Same kind of thing, a little bit when it comes to sequencing like this, of like, it's a sample size of one. And even though we like to lean into the probabilities of like 60% of the time this is good or 70% of the time this is good, right? But this one scenario, it's different. And really having that opportunity as a pitcher is so massive.
Yeah, I fully agree. Sequencing is incredibly nuanced, and it is a read and react situation depending on what the batter, how the batter's approaches that particular at bat, which might change from his at bat at the beginning. So I agree with you, and I am excited to listen to that conversation on The Craft, which I have not yet listened to. So we are going to move over to the Twins to wrap up the AL Central. It's the White Sox this weekend, and then the Tigers and the Guardians next week. Nobody is set to get a two-start week because there is the expectation that Joe Ryan will return next week. We don't really know at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't pitched in a rehab game. He's been doing live bullpens. So this will come down to the Twins and their belief in their ability to land a playoff spot and how quick they want to rush back Joe Ryan. So keep an eye on that. If Joe Ryan does not return, that would be a two-start week for Connor Prelip, Detroit and Cleveland. Connor Prelip, who did not make a traditional start this week, but followed behind an opener. And that may be kind of interesting going forward if that sticks.
Yeah, it's Connor Prelip is, to me, the perfect showcase of a young gun, someone who I think will be better next year because he has the stuff. And you see inside of games where, like, he'll get 7 strikeouts in 5 innings, and then he'll lose the other guys, right? It's about consistency and really harnessing what he has constantly throughout a game. Zebby Matthews, by the way, is looking a lot better. The last two games that I've seen for him are, A, the best slider he's ever had, location-wise. Like, he had 23 whiffs, won a Gallows Bowl. It's insane. And then the next one was unbelievable left-handed batter command, where he actually had pitch separation and lived on the edges for the first time, because he's a really great example of control is not command, where he was throwing a lot of strikes in the zone, but those are really hittable and just strikes and not actually surgically moving around the zone and creating that weak contact. So I'm really excited to see how he's going to perform tonight on Friday against the White Sox. And if that is more of the same, I mean, it's a little, I can't quite believe it because I saw one game of one kind of command and one game of another, and the slider wasn't as dominant in that second game. It was 1/14 whiffs as opposed to, like, what was it, 10/33 or something stupid. I'm not super confident, but I also will acknowledge that Zebby Matthews might actually be trying something different with his approach and his mentality of executing everything. So excited for that. And Dean Kramer, look, Dean Kramer, I know it sounds so silly, Eric, but the splitter and the cutter are still effective. And it's like, right, I'm watching these games with him and it's little microcosms of bad timing, or like the 3-run shot from Alec Boehm in the 6th that was on a splitter high and tight that somehow with 2 outs got a 3-run homer, right? Or you have the like 5 hits and like 4 runs because all of them came exactly the right time. I don't know. I get a sense that Dean Kramer is better than what we've seen in at Tigers. I think is worthwhile in a 15 teamer.
Yeah, I agree with the 15 team league there. We're going to move on to the AL West, but before we do that, we're going to take a short little break. Starting the AL West with the A's, they are in Seattle this weekend, and then it's home all of next week. Toronto and Seattle. It's two-start week for Jacob Lopez. And in Sacramento, Jacob Lopez might be the only pitcher that I can trust right now.
Jacob Lopez, oh my gosh. You guys listen to OTC Podcast. You were wise and smart. And in the second half, you saw, like we did, oh my gosh, Jacob Lopez is doing the old approach from last year where he went on an amazing stretch. So I'm going to just see how this goes. He's been insane. I mean, I really just can't. I feel like I should put him in auto start at this point because we're just going to auto start this until he just doesn't do it. It's awesome. Gage Jump is the most annoying hipster there is right now of just 11 strikeouts. And then I'm terrible. But then maybe I'm not. But yes, I am. I don't know. So good luck and do what you need to do there. But in my 12-team playoffs, I wouldn't go for it unless I was desperate on Sunday. I'm like, I need to find something here. That would be a good option because, yeah, don't trust it for ratios, but if you're trying to find like 8 strikeouts or something on Sunday, Gage Jump is an option there.
And Nick is talking about this Sunday in Seattle Yes. Not the not Sacramento next week. Start
yes.
next weekend.
Good call.
Yeah. Houston, they're against Arizona this weekend. Then they're at Philadelphia, at Tampa Bay. It is a two-start week for Hayden Wesneski. I know that he has been pitching better of late. A two-start week against Philadelphia and Tampa Bay makes me really nervous, in particular because even though he's been handling lefties, like he had a pretty good start against the Yankees. The Yankees throw a lot of lefties out there. But starting Hayden Wesneski in Philadelphia against like Schwarber and Bryce Harper, it makes me a little nervous.
Did you say Schwarber like shawarma?
No,
I'm not one to criticize the words and how people pronounce things.
I love shawarma, though. Yeah. Maybe I'm
Schwarber. Okay. Wesneski is someone who's been really weak contact focused lately. And I don't know how much I want to believe in that, but last game, for example, was like about 80% weak contact versus 20% hard. I just make it binary between the two. And there's something to that. He is locating and executing a game plan effectively. It's just really the only thing that I think is good is the sinker sweeper to right-handers.
Yeah.
So lefties, as you mentioned, the approach not as strong. I think it's a 15-team worthy two-step, but I don't think it's a home run there. Peter Lambert, we're still going with Christian Javier. It's going to happen, guys. He's like, I don't get it, like why it hasn't totally yet. He did actually axe the cutter last game, which is a little annoying because I feel like that was a game changer for him.
We like
but
that.
I don't know. He should be better than he has been. He really, it's kind of frustrating to me. And I'm waiting for that to happen, but I understand completely. Again, 12 teamers, like you can't bank on it because we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before that sometimes those pitch mix changes don't click in immediately. And so maybe it'll click for Javier at some point in time. I probably wouldn't take the gamble against the Phillies next week, but there could be a decent start here against Arizona. I feel like it might be in the cards. The Angels, who are firing everybody, their entire pitching staff, all their scouts, just everything.
I think that's a good move, honestly. I'm saying it more of just like, look, we've done it a certain way, a certain amount of time, and we need just something new. That's all. Not saying that they necessarily are bad, just you got to have something new.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. They're at Pittsburgh this weekend, then it's at Boston, at the Nationals. It's two-start week next week for Grayson Rodriguez. Listen, I can't do that. We've already talked about that before. I will say the Nationals and the Red Sox are both teams that will throw a lot of left-handed hitters against him, and the fastball changeup is what is working for him. So there is a world where Grayson Rodriguez could actually have two decent starts. I don't think those are going to be starts with lots of strikeouts, and I don't think those are going to be starts with wins. And so you have to take that risk where you want. You're basically making that a ratio only play for Grayson Rodriguez, which it's a difficult sell to me outside of like an AL only format.
Sure. So first and foremost, I was thinking, what wins? But he's on the Orioles, and they aren't they like 500? I'm like, oh, right. Angels. Grayson Rodriguez, I kind of hear you. And I feel like against the Nationals, especially next Sunday, that was very tempting to put into questionable, at the very least. I think in a 15-teamer, I would consider Grayson Rodriguez here. Because Grayson Rodriguez, I think, is getting better. He also tried to throw a cutter, if you remember, and it was a pitch that hit a guy in the foot, but it was 89. He finally like, hey, here's an 89 mile per hour breaker. Hit the guy in the foot, lefty. But you know what? At least it exists, kind of. And the four-seamer command is really good. So this could just be enough to like throw these in the zone and get through them. I do very much believe that Grayson is improving, and it's a perfect showcase of just, I need runway. I just need reps. I just give guys time to really find themselves across the season, especially one where they haven't pitched for as long as he has. And you will see improvements in consistency over time. Duh, it's a skill that they need to relearn. So I would consider that a little bit. Yusei Kikuchi to me is a real interesting one here, because last game was a 88 mile per hour gyro slider that was very effective against the Phillies. The four-seamer got away with more than I expected to. He's throwing strikes. And it is at Pittsburgh, and then it's at Washington. I think that there might be something here, especially this weekend, if you're looking for a stream. Kikuchi should be someone to consider on Saturday. And then Friday next week at Washington could work as well. Ryan Johnson, I can't touch. We've talked about him a lot in the past. Arena is amazing right now, and so is Detmers. So rolling with those.
We'll just say Ryan Johnson with a new approach since the Angels changed their pitch coaching staff. That's not to take away from what you were saying or change it, but it the results have been a little bit better. At least, you know, the ratios have been a little bit better because he is going like very, I believe, cutter heavy.
He doesn't go deep into games either. Yeah. But
no. Yeah. It's not, it's just watch the changes.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to put him into your lineup. Mm-hmm. Seattle. Remember when this rotation was just locked in and great?
Yeah, completely.
They get the Athletics this weekend. Then it's Texas. And then it is at the Athletics next week.
Right.
Their expectation is that Emerson Hancock comes back next weekend. His still ill will be in Sacramento. And so that's a situation we probably want to avoid.
Yes.
Shocker that we have seen growth from Cade Anderson's fastball in terms of its IVB since he has made that debut where we were like, oh my God, he lost all this vertical movement because he's adjusting to the new ball. He's been, you know, solid enough that I'm taking that start at home against Texas next week. And then Logan Gilbert, I mean, I can trust it. Brian Wu on the road in Sacramento, I'm like a little bit nervous about.
I get that, but Wu's pitching great. That's the thing. I mean, I think like all the home road splits and stuff too with Wu. Look, right now he's realizing, yeah, I need my fastball to be amazing right now. And he's pushed it up in velocity. I'm still very much in on Brian Wu here. Cade Anderson, I absolutely agree with you that the vert was about 15 or so in the first game, and the last two have been about 17. Both of them, all three have been in a dome that is either in Safeco or T-Mobile or in Toronto. And Cade Anderson to me is someone who should have a good floor. He is a good command pitcher. It wasn't actually very good against the Athletics last game. It was easily the worst I've seen from him, where his changeup and his curveball and his four-seamer found the middle of the plate against right-handers a lot more. And thus, what do you know? He allowed more hits in that game. He was not able to put away guys. Only had a 30% overall put-away rate, had a much lower two-strike rate, which means that these guys were seeing good pitches that they wanted to hit and put them into play earlier on in at-bats. And I think Cade Anderson is a really solid pitcher. He does not have the overwhelming stuff. And it really is so dependent on that command that it does make me, in general, concerned. But I see this as like a floor of a Toby. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Kirby is a hipster, so whatever. Bryce Miller, I just can't touch. And yeah, I don't want to do that Emerson Hancock one. Of course, we're starting Logan Gilbert.
The Bryce Miller thing is so weird to me. They had moved him into the bullpen because he admitted he was pitching through a lat injury. Now they're going to let him start again because of other injuries.
They have no one else.
They have Ryan Sloan in double.
No, they're not going to start Ryan Sloan though.
But they could.
I mean, they should. They feel like
clearly,
he's not ready.
A clearly injured Bryce
Miller. I know. Trust me. I understand. This has always been the weirdest thing about the Mariners to me is that they just have no depth. And like it's been insane that they've had such a rock rotation that they had six guys with no injuries, only someone coming back. That was Bryce Miller until this Emerson Hancock injury, which is nuts. Like absolutely nuts. It's crazy. And they trade away Castillo, even though I was like, I don't think they can because they need it. I don't know.
Right. No, I got it at that point, but yeah, it's a little tough.
And
moving on to Texas.
This is the situation now. Okay. Yeah.
The Rangers get Tampa Bay this weekend, and then it's on the road all next week at Seattle, at Arizona. It's two-start week for Cody Bradford, Seattle and Arizona. It's tough. I was a little more optimistic about him coming back. I thought we'd at least get like really solid ratios in like five-inning stints. But again, you're talking about a command-focused pitcher who's coming back from elbow surgery. And so, you know, this isn't a guy who could just rely on raw stuff if the locations aren't there. And so I think it made sense that there would be some rough moments in here. Cal Quantrill at Seattle next week. Are we keeping this train rolling?
Oh yeah. You know, one of the things I actually was talking about Jason Collette with this is like, man, the people who picked up Jacob Lopez and Cody Bradford, because he recently saw them against the Rays. It was like, man, those guys are sitting pretty. And it makes me really think about our philosophy of having a 12-team redraft league where you are going after the exciting guys and not the Tobys. Because if you have a Toby, if you have a guy like Framber Valdez, you're just holding on to him throughout the entire year and you're dealing with that or whatever. And if you go for someone like Collette did, which is he had Jack Leiter, but he drops him and then he's able to pick up somebody else. And then gives you the opportunity to get someone like Jacob Lopez or Cal Quantrill. So it's something to think about with, you know, it's not necessarily for the whole year when you get these guys. And who are the ones that you're able to drop quicker in the season to give yourself the opportunity to make these kinds of pickups. But Cal Quantrill is just in a groove right now. I mean, really, just don't think about it. Cody Bradford is at 90, slightly underneath it, but that's never really been, like, we knew that. It's more about, are you getting the pitch separation with your four-seamer and changeup right now? And the four-seamer actually did come down and get some called strikes, but then it got hit upstairs. So I don't like it right now, especially against Arizona, but I will at least say, hey, maybe he can go six in Seattle. So I'll give that as a questionable.
And that's going to do it for the AL. So we're going to move on to the NL here. We're going to start with the NL East with the Braves. They're at Philadelphia this weekend, including Sunday night on Sunday Night Baseball. Make sure you check that out where my research gets used in a lot of the broadcasts, which is pretty cool. And then they have a wraparound against Philadelphia on Monday, and then it's Tampa Bay, and then it's at home against Philadelphia. It's two-start week for Grant Holmes next week, both starts against Philadelphia, which I can't do. This is Chris Sale to me, and then Tyler Mahle. I don't love that it's Philadelphia, but he's just been pitching so well since coming to the Braves. A lot of that is a little added velocity on the four-seam fastball. He's elevating the four-seam fastball a little bit more often and locating the splitter better. And so elevated four-seam fastballs plus more splitters in the zone is lead, and especially when those elevated four-seam fastballs have an extra tick of velocity, that's leading to that success for Mahle. Right now, I can't see moving away from him given how he's pitched, but it does make me, I'll just say it makes me nervous that it's Philadelphia.
Yeah, what's really fun with Grant Holmes is that he was throwing a perfect game through three innings and then a rain delay knocked him out. I mean, of course, that's just like, one turn in the lineup. He has been doing better, and I can understand people like, oh man, Grant Holmes is a Vargas right now for me. I got to do it. I'm like, okay, you go and do that. Just don't do AJ Smith-Shawver and don't do Bryce Elder. And if you need a cheap win, sure, Martin Perez can be that. He's not pitching. Yep. He's a little bit more in rhythm. Tyler Mahle, I just think, is great. I just think he's doing everything you really want him to do. He had a bad game against Philly early on in the season, but that was actually a careful licorice where he was cruising until like the last inning, and then it just kind of got singled out. So I'm in on Tyler Mahle and Chris Sale here, Martin Perez for a cheap win. And if you must with Grant Holmes, I don't blame you. I think one of those could be serviceable, but just boring, honestly, for the real estate broker Grant Holmes.
What's not boring is the two pitchers we really like on the Marlins.
Well,
they get the Cubs this weekend, and then it's Miami and the Dodgers. Yuri Perez is not boring. Yuri Perez gets a two-start week next week against the Mets and the Dodgers. I understand that, you know, the Dodgers start will worry us a little bit. I will say the Dodgers are basically like a 500 team over the last like 35 games. Let's say the Dodgers aren't good, but that should not scare you away from Yuri Perez in a two-start week. And then I know that Sandy Alcantara might be a little boring, but I'm going to lock him in and pitch him against the Mets, and I don't think I can use the rest of this Marlins rotation right now.
Yuri Perez is going through a weird moment. And it's kind of funny. We had a great article yesterday, a going deep piece on Yuri Perez, but it came after his two starts that were just really bad. Going deeps take a while, guys. You know, sometimes it's not always the perfect time. It's really, really tough. But I mean, you still got to roll with it. And I think he should be better than this. I think his fastballs are just too good. He's throwing a little bit too many pitches over the middle of the plate all of a sudden. And it goes. But at least he's throwing his changeup for strikes now, as opposed to like the 25% rates we saw last year for Erie. So we're going to go with those two. And then Junk, Gusto, and Phillips are just all underperformers. And not to mention that the Marlins are really, really short on their leashes. Maybe Tyler Phillips is getting a little bit more, but it's not enough. Cubs and Dodgers for the most part, and Junk just does not go five constantly. So not touching that.
We've talked a lot about Junk and how the pieces are there. And we want to see them be put together. They're not being put together right now, but I still maintain I might be interested in Jansen Junk in 2027. The Mets get the Giants this week. weekend that's at Miami and at the Yankees. It's two start week for Sean Manaea at Miami and at the Yankees. This is not Sean Manaea pitching like he was pitching a month ago. And I do not love that at Yankees on the back half. Even though the Yankees lineup against lefties is less intimidating, just because some of those guys that are hitting well right now, those lefties that are hitting well right now, are far worse against lefties. And then you bring in guys like Elio Ramos into the lineup, and it's Elio Ramos isn't bad, but it's not the same as what they're getting from some of the lefties against righties. That being said, I still don't know that I could trust this. I'm curious if you can trust Sean Manaea, and then I'm also curious, it seems like we're going to get Jonah Tong coming up. Do you have any interest in that? In any
Jonah Tong, we had a really, I think, a very interesting discussion on Discord about it, and it's really huge props to the community and also our Dynasty team really for like really digging into this stuff. And with Tong, I am not a believer because it's really still just four seamer and split change, Vulcan change with the cutter that he's getting more strikes, which is nice, but it's not something that I feel like he's brand new and different. And it's not really anything to say like, yes, we should expect Jonah Tong to do well right out of the gate. I think he recently overperformed in his last start and I wouldn't go for that. Zach Thornton is, I mean, making it work with four seamers and cutters inside the righties and fine. If you want to just roll with that, sure, you're not going to get strikeouts. It is not the greatest ratio ceiling. You know, it's like a weird, like, small room of, like, you should be expecting six innings of 2 to 3 earned runs and a whip of, like, 117, essentially, something like that. But hopefully you do get those six innings. Sean Manaea is not locating his four-seamer well enough for me to really lean into it, and Nolan McClain is just Nolan McClain. And Christian Scott against the Giants should work. He has these weird moments of, like, one inning where you're just like, ugh, there it goes. And he still is also not really focusing on the what I call the changeup, which is the 91 mile per hour mystery sinker. But I think he really should against right-handers. He needs that depth so badly. And the splitter to me isn't really that. The curveball isn't really that. He needs that thing to work. The sweeper is the hand of God sweeper. It's staying up. So yeah. I hope he finds that, but he still has a really good lefty approach. So I'll go with it against the Giants, questionable against the Yankees.
Just a note on Jonah Tong. He is scheduled to pitch on Saturday at AAA. So if he makes that start, he will obviously not pitch for the Mets on Wednesday. If he does not start on Saturday in AAA, expect him to be up for the Mets against the Marlins. So if you were even intrigued by Jonah Tong, just that's one thing to watch over the weekend. That will tell us if he's coming up or not. The Phillies, they get Atlanta this weekend with the wraparound on Monday. They get Houston and Atlanta next week, which means it's two-start week for both Jesus Luzardo and Andrew Painter, Houston and Atlanta. We have talked enough about how Painter has been pitching that I like him in that two-start week, even though Houston and Atlanta aren't like, hey, I have to attack that offense. It's a two-start week from a pitcher who's on a pretty good run against offenses that are solid but not, you know, scaring the pants off me. And so I think I'm using that two start.
Yeah. I would say, I get that completely with Andrew Painter. I'm just a little worried that the four seamer is not the good one. Like we got two starts of him having this like 97, 98 mile per hour four seamer with extra stuff plus on it. And it was just like, oh, we're so excited. It's the best as fastball's ever felt. And then it's been 96 since. I'm like, okay. Good thing is that the sweeper and the slider are getting whiffs and it's being located really well against right-handers. And that changeup that he brought back from the minors is still very much present and good against the lefties. So I'm still in on Andrew Painter. I'm not as excited because the four-seamer is not that elite offering that it was for a moment. And it's also not as good vert either. It's not 18 inches of vert. Right. It's like 16. And that those two factors... Like, well, yes. Okay, is that something that's going to get back to it? Is it not? But it's still good enough, like, that I have him as a probable start. And I agree with you, two-step, easy, Houston and Atlanta. And Aaron Nola, we'll find out on NBC Sports on Sunday night how that goes against
Atlanta.
And maybe that
we'll have some
promising.
We'll have some research on that, just about how Aaron Nola, over the last seven starts, has kind of changed his approach based on where he was getting hit in the zone, has started to focus a lot more on pitching down in the zone. Should also note that I did some research because Noah, especially in his older years, we should say, but he's been far more command focused. And Aaron Nola this year has been losing a lot of called strikes on his curveball at the bottom of the zone that were out of the zone last year and were called strikes. And this year, they are that rate has been cut in half of curveballs that were out of the zone low last year that were called strikes that are now not being called strikes because of the ABS system. Surprisingly, also, where he lost the most was glove side sinkers that were out of the zone and called strikes, but then were this year are not being called strikes. It's not a pitch he uses like an incredible amount of time, but was just something to think about that like those glove side sinkers mean sinkers away to righties or sinkers in on, on lefties. Again, it's not a common pitch for him, but he has had to adjust to, hey, I'm not getting the benefit of this like one ball outside of the zone that I used to get. And some of those guys take a little bit longer to make that adjustment.
Yeah, definitely. It's fun stuff. You got to tune in, guys.
You got to tune in. Wrapping up the NL East with the Nationals. They got the Dodgers this weekend, and then it's San Diego and LA. Cade Cavalli, it's potentially coronation day on Saturday against the Dodgers. Regardless, I feel like you feel pretty good about that matchup against the Angels next week.
Oh yeah, you got to do it. And the velocity is there, and even though cutter is still present, it's cool.
You've got a questionable start for next week, not this weekend against the Dodgers, but for next week, Jackson Kent against the Padres.
I'm just saying, I know two first names. I understand, but it's really actually reverse. You could say Kent Jackson. Actually, it's kind of funny. It's like two first and two last names. But anyway, Jackson Kent is it's kind of like Jake Bennett, where it's a 7-foot extension plus southpaw who can go high four seamer and low changeup. And we just saw him go 7 innings of production. I know it wasn't necessarily all the whiffs, but this is something that Jake Crumpler and I have seen over his first handful of starts, that Jackson Kent was close to executing this plan and has gotten a little bit better since. So I wouldn't take the chance against the Dodgers. However, against the Padres next week, it's now more believable that he can give you a good start. I'm really upset that Will Dion is not getting the leash that he deserves. He went like 35 pitches in his last one, and it's just, oh, come on, man. Brad Lord went like 3 and change, but it was a rain delay, and he was actually pitching well. Yeah, like 6 strikeouts. It felt so bad for him. Finally, a proper start for him. He's not even involved in this, and it might be something where it's another Brad Lord, Will Dion piggyback. It could be reversed, where it's now Will Dion opening and then Brad Lord following, and I would actually be okay with Brad Lord following. He's a sinker-focused guy, but he throws hard with it. He can get outs with it. He has decent breaking ball, etc. So I don't know. I mean, I still have a soft spot for Dion. If you guys don't remember, he's super over the top. Jake Crumpler comped him to a left-handed Angel, Alan Rangel, and which is good because you don't want the super over the top from the right side. You want it from the left side where it's like this molasses changeup. So we'll see what happens. But for now, it's just going to be Jackson Kent and Cade Cavalli's ones I would consider. I would, come to think of it, I am going to also put in Andrew Alvarez as a questionable start against the Angels.
Ooh, okay.
Just because I recognize that the curveball has been very effective and it's the Angels, and he'll be able to throw hopefully some more back foot breaking balls in there too. I don't love it. I don't think he goes long enough into games, but I do recognize the Angels are not a good offense and Alvarez could provide some sort of decency there. So I'll upgrade that one.
There you go. We're going to move on to the NL Central, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick little break. Starting the NL Central with Chicago Cubs. They get Miami this weekend. And then it is at Milwaukee or home against Pittsburgh. It's 2-start week for David Peterson, Milwaukee and Pittsburgh. Makes me a little bit nervous in a 15-team league. Again, I can talk myself into any kind of decent starter with a chance at wins at this point in the season. I would be avoiding this in my 12-team leagues. But I want to talk to you about tonight's start first. It's been tough for Shota Imanaga of late. so tough that the Cubs have to continually defend that they are keeping him in the rotation. Are you running him out there against the Marlins?
Yes, I think it's a good situation. It's a good pitcher's park. He's getting whiffs, guys. Yes, the home runs have returned in some fashion, like Palpatine somehow. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying. I get it. But we were more concerned when it was 90 and change in velocity. Now he's back at 91, 92 again. And I really just, look, it's ebbs and flows of the season. It really is. When we were so concerned about the home runs earlier on, what does he do? He goes like eight starts of like one home run all of a sudden. And it just is, it's how it goes. It's a good matchup. I think you roll with it.
Yeah, okay. And then Matthew Boyd, you're questionable on against Miami, though.
Yeah, he's, I mean, he is allowing a ton of home runs, and he doesn't have the whiff ability that Imanaga has. It's that simple.
Okay. Moving on to the Reds. We got to talk about something with the Reds. Basically, there has been nobody we want to start with the Reds, except for Chase Burns, in particular because next week they get the Dodgers and the Brewers, and so those are not really good matchups. But we also got a report that after the start on Monday, the Reds plan to limit Chase Burns's innings, and they will be using Brandon Williamson, who is just activated off the IL, as basically a follower for Chase Burns. Now, they have used the term piggyback, and so this is not like a, I don't know that it's a set. Chase Burns is always going to go three innings. Chase Burns is going to go four innings. But what we do know is that after this start on Monday, they are planning to limit Chase Burns' workload, and he will. They have a planned starter pitching after him.
Yeah.
So what that says to me is it will be highly unlikely that Chase Burns will go five innings in any start after this start on Monday. And that makes him really hard to roster. If you're in deeper formats and you don't care about wins, but you think that four innings from Chase Burns is going to get you ratios and strikeouts, totally fine. If you need legitimate wins from a starting pitcher, or you really do care about the bulk innings that you were potentially getting before, it's going to be really hard to hold on to Chase Burns after next week.
Yeah, it's also an interesting thing. What is the quote that we have, or the line we say in the spring? Is that managers lie? And I have certainly seen in the past, oh yeah, we're going to shut him down. It's going to be this, it's going to be that. And then they just keep going and it doesn't stop. I do believe with you, Eric. I am on your side that, like, yeah, they are going to do this. And it's very much up to you what you want to do with it. Don't start anyone else, though. And maybe eventually you do want Williamson as the follower to maybe steal some wins or whatever it is. But yeah. I don't trust Nick Lodolo in his curveball field at the moment as he goes against the Dodgers. I really don't like Brady Singer, even though he can get quality starts. It's just very meh at the moment. And Andrew Abbott does what Abbott does, and it's just I'm not dealing with it. So honestly, I just avoid them all. And if you are looking at next week and like, okay, I need more volume than this, I mean, it's a two-step, so you combine it into seven innings, you just won't get a win. So think of it that way. It's up to you.
That, I mean, I guess, yeah, fingers crossed that that's how they actually do it and they don't bump him to, you know, later on in the week. But yes, that is entirely possible. Moving on to the Milwaukee Brewers. They are at Cincinnati this weekend. And then next week it is the Cubs and Cincinnati. No two-start week for them because we know they use six-man rotation. We know that Jacob Mizorowski and Logan Henderson are guys that we are using regardless of who they're facing. I'm curious if Kyle Harrison is still somebody that you are using regardless of who they're facing. The last game out against the Cubs was not a good one. He had two decent starts before that, but he also had a really bad start against the Padres. So the results have been just a little bit more inconsistent since his return from the injured list with, I believe it was that forearm issue is what they were referring to it as.
Yeah. Alvin Henn on our Discord, he's a Peel Pro member, was really pushing in about the home road splits of Kyle Harrison. And I was like, okay, look, there were like two games that were like eight earned runs each on the road. That's going to do it. But he did actually run some more things excluding that. And it is a very, very distinct split of like a 103 ERA versus a 425 and a 146 whip on the road and a 0.65 at home. Like it is kind of interesting to be like that. much of disparity when I normally say just like, okay, it is a random grouping. I should have actually responded to him on it. I thought I didn't. I guess I did not. So thank you so much, Alvin Hen. Maybe there is something to it. And I totally understand if you have Kyle Harrison right now and you're seeing the lower velocity underneath 94, that you don't want to start him in Cincinnati. And that's fine. That's why I have him as a probable instead of an auto. At the very least, hosting the Reds, I'm going to at least acknowledge that there is a higher chance at this moment that he does better at home in Milwaukee. That last game was just a home run barrage, and it was a lot on the four-seamer. So it is a little concerning at the moment. I think if I have Kyle Harrison, I don't feel like I'm going to bench him at Cincinnati. But I understand if you want to be conservative there. Dustin May, I think, should be better. I think he's going to be better hosting the Reds than going into Cincinnati mm-hmm. right now, because he needs like one more start to get his rhythm back and get his confidence back. It's been a very strange string of delays or a comebacker or whatever it has been. And then all of a sudden last week's just not good one. You also have Change Rohan, who I think is doing better with understanding his arsenal and executing it finally. And I love the fact that the Brewers are giving him that shot, but I don't trust Gasser at all. Mizorowski finally had like a bad start. And it's like, what is this? This game above 300 runs all year. Don't slow down now, buddy. You got like three more until you win the Cy Young, please. And Logan Henderson is just insanely consistent, and you got to go with that.
Got to go with that. Move it to the Pirates. They get LA this weekend at Chicago and at Chicago. It's at the White Sox and the Cubs. It's a two-start week for Bubba Chandler. We have talked about Bubba Chandler ad nauseum on our pod, on this show, this podcast. It's just not a pitcher that we have come to trust. We have continued to kind of trust Jared Jones, and you're going to start him against the Angels and the White Sox his next two times out.
Great matchups. I think that he does enough to come through with them. You also have Braxton Ashcraft, who hasn't gotten enough whiffs, really. He's not throwing the breakers enough, but at least he's going to be forced to, I think, against the Angels. So hopefully we see the slider come to life there. And with Bubba Chandler, it's like I've exhausted so much breath on him, where there's the curveball that's like a gyro slider, but then now he's added extra sweep to it now. I don't know what we're going to get with Bubba Chandler. And it's like, dude, just you have the things. Don't change them. Just locate them better. Please, just focus 100% on where you're putting them, and then you'll have that success. And with Paul Skenes, it's Paul Skenes. It's just nothing you can do, I think, at this point. You're going to sail with this ship, or you're going to sink with it. So good luck.
Yeah. Braxton Ashcraft has been leaning into the sinker a lot more, which is why some of those strikeouts have gone away. Wrapping up the Central with the Cardinals. They're at Colorado this weekend, and then it's Giants and White Sox next week. It's two-start week for Michael McGreevy, San Francisco and the White Sox. I'm okay using McGreevy against the Giants in a deeper format as a ratio play. I don't love it as a two-start week because I don't love that White Sox matchup. I'm curious your thoughts on McGreevy and then why you are so optimistic about Quinn Matthews.
Okay. First and foremost, we have Leahy, who's on a limited pitch count, so we're not going to do that.
Yes.
And we have Andre Pallante again in Coors. No, thank you. And maybe at San Francisco, that's good because that's a good matchup for him. He can get weak contact and get through that. That's fine. Michael McGreevy, same kind of way. He's very interesting to me. And McGreevy, like, do you have strikeouts one game? You don't in the other. It's just okay. Whatever. It is at San Francisco. Maybe I even make that a questionable start against the White Sox. The White Sox offense is not very anything to write home about. Matthew Liberatore is throwing more sliders to right-handers all of a sudden, and he's pushing up to 29% strikeout rate since he's done that. And I really should be actually upgrading that Chicago White Sox one for him just because he is a strikeout threat. While then you have Quinn Matthews. And Quinn Matthews, I think, is a really good pitcher who just needs more time. And I like that matchup in San Francisco. I think he does enough with his stuff, and especially after grinding yesterday against the Dodgers, you really did get to see that he is really harnessing what he has and finding those. I guess I'll put it this way. I like to see pitchers get out of jams. I like to see them go into the back pocket and execute that pitch and really showcase that they can do that. Ian Khan has a whole thing about this, where it's like you can see the confidence growing inside of a pitcher. And here he is after going against the Dodgers in L.A., at San Francisco is just so nice. So I feel like he's going to cruise in that one and then keep that moving on for the rest of the year. I think we're going to be liking Quinn Matthews in our drafts next season as well.
Quinn Matthews, you heard it here. Maybe not first. moving on to the NL West, we got Arizona. They got Houston this weekend, then it's at Kansas City and against Texas. We should just note this rotation is very in flux right now. There are reports that Zach Gallen and Michael Soroka are going to return next week. The plan for Zach Gallen and Michael Soroka was to pitch four innings over the weekend at about 60 pitches. I believe that might be taking place today, Friday. But just know that if they come back next week, that's after an outing that was planned for about 60 pitches. So maybe you're getting like 75 pitches from them in their return. Obviously, we'll see what they actually throw this weekend. But it's not like Zach Gallen and, well, Soroka's been out for a while, but it's not like Zach Gallen was pitching well enough that you need to rush him back if he makes it back to the rotation. And Soroka is somebody I would certainly wait on as well. I would have no problem with you adding him because he was pitching well, but 75 pitches from Soroka maybe against Texas is not something I need to force into my lineup. Yeah. I'm okay holding off on that.
Yeah, it's not ideal there, and I'm tempted to push him down and do not start there. I might push up also Merrill Kelly into questionable because he did look a lot better recently and is getting the pitch separation you want to see. It is at Houston, which is very interesting this week because it is going to be fewer lefties. But I am curious to see how that happens Friday night, but against Texas, hosting them is good. Brandon Fott's pitch separation and his command is as good as I've seen in his career. So that's amazing. Erod, you're going to roll with. Mitch Bratt. Bratt, I don't have any interest in. I feel like that's just what he does when he pitches. It's like a shotgun blast. And then you have Jose Cabrera, who's really a bullpen game every single time. I have no interest in Zach Allen. Can't do that.
We have no interest in talking about the Rockies pitchers because we're running behind right now.
Yes, so as always. Might go a little bit long on this.
Might go a little bit long. Moving on to the Dodgers. They get Washington this weekend, and then it's home at Cincinnati at Miami. We have been told Shohei Ohtani is not going to pitch the rest of this regular season. The reports for the Dodgers is that they hope he can pitch for them in the playoffs. So I would not be banking on that at all in the regular season. Emmett Sheehan back Sunday against Washington, potentially next Sunday against Miami. What are your thoughts on Emmett Sheehan?
Okay. I feel like Emmett Sheehan should be great. He's been killing it in the minors. Like, he's just executing this stuff. I'm like, yeah, this is really good. Oh my gosh, I can't just slide like this. What's going on? So it should be good, but it's also the return, and I don't know how they're going to use him and all this kind of stuff. Same thing with Justin Robleski. If it's a desperate Sunday, no one's noticing that it's Emmett Sheehan, yes, I would pick up Emmett Sheehan and just give it a shot there. Because also the Dodgers are in a situation where, like, yeah, we just need to get to the playoffs and we'll utilize Sheehan as best as we can to save our bullpen and make sure that they're rested as well. So that's where I'm leaning on that. And that's why I also have him as a probable start at the end there at Miami, because I feel like after the first one, he'll get more leg room to go maybe 5-6 innings with more certainty. Maybe push that 80 pitch mark, the higher probability. So, good stuff there with the Dodgers and really Robleski. I mean, I feel like that should be fine too. And we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see if I'll use any of these Padres starting pitchers. They get the Yankees this weekend. Then it's Washington and San Francisco. Not a two-start week for anybody because we could get a Nick Pivetta return next week. It seemed like we were getting a Joe Musgrove return, but he had to pause the rehab again. At this point, I just kind of feel bad for Joe Musgrove. And I had stashed him in some 15-team leagues thinking we were getting him back. And so I'm going to move on from that. Maybe he makes a start in like the last week of September. But at this point, I have no confidence in that. Pivetta would be a great stash. He was, you know, he's been out for a long time. I don't know that I would use him against San Francisco, but we could get some decent starts. Remember that this is a team that is in playoff contention. So this is not a team with a locked in playoff spot. So their goal isn't, hey, we need Nick Pivetta healthy for the playoffs. Their goal is, hey, Nick Pivetta, we need you to help get us to the playoffs.
Right.
And so I don't think they're going to baby him when he does return. Casey Mize has been, questionable the last like three starts. And I find it hard to use Casey Mize in fantasy leagues right now.
There are so many storylines here. I don't want to talk about Walker Buehler because Walker Buehler, even though he's had some success, is just like, I can't believe in that. Also, it hasn't gone long, no strikeouts, et cetera. Randy Vasquez, same kind of thing. So you have Robbie Ray, who is finding out again that he has a good four-seamer to throw upstairs against right-handers is great. He's not leaning into the slider and curveball, actually the slider enough back foot. The curveball somehow appears and it's like, oh, is this a good pitch or not? It's really just one of those things he has a feel for in a given day. I really just want that back foot slider right-handers. What is going on? Why isn't that not there? I don't know. I really, really hope he gets that going soon. Michael King is fine. It's really one of those guys, I think, looking back, people are going to like it. And I'm going to be like out on it next year because I really feel he's struggling to find any sort of consistency and rhythm. And to me, this is massive low potential for him in 2027. But right now, you got no choice. You're going to go with it. Casey Mize is so strange, where he had the weird injury stuff before the deadline, and then he felt like he was coming back and good, and then he slipped on the dugout stairs and hurt his ankle, and the next start he was 91, 92, and then now he's back to 93, 94. Okay. All right, so I feel like we're finally in the position that we are okay with Mize. He's going against the Nationals, and it's going to require the splitter to show up. I hope it does. Simple as that. And then Pivetta, last game that we saw from Pivetta was 64 pitches in 4.1 innings in Oklahoma against the Dodgers affiliate in AAA on the 30th of August. That came with 7 strikeouts, which is cool, but 6 whiffs and a 92 to 93 mile per hour four-seamer, which is not the 94, 95 that you want to see. He had less vert on it. I don't know what the elevation is, but I do want to, I kind of feel like it's not that elevated there because he did still have a big curveball there at negative 12. So it's a little strange. And I would not trust Pivetta out of the gate here, especially 64 pitches means about 70, 75. It's not the worst, you know, idea for 70, 75 of Nick Pivetta, but I get a sense that he's not going to be good in the first start back.
Yeah, I would skip that first start back as well. We're ending here with the Giants. They get the Mets this weekend, St. Louis and San Diego next week. It's 2-start week for Landon Roop. And listen, I think that we are back a little bit on the Landon Roop train. We talked separately. There was a report that came out. A lot of Landon Roop struggles tied back to he had pitched. He had 2 starts where he went back to back over 100 pitches and had mentioned that that wasn't something he had done since, I believe, college, and that his arm was basically very tired for the next few starts. And so we can have a whole separate conversation about whether we are monitoring innings and pitch counts and whatever too much, right? And that's to the detriment of the pitchers. But it is important to know that there is empirical evidence, and we're, you know, this is directly from one of the pitchers too, that like when pitchers do have a sharp spike in usage in pitch counts over a consolidated period, like 2-3 whatever starts, it can lead to arm fatigue. And that doesn't mean they're injured, but it can lead to arm fatigue, and you can see some dips in performance after that. I think that was what happened with Landon Roop. And so I'm okay with this in a 2-start week because I think these matchups are fine. They're not great, but they're also not terrible.
Yeah. With Roop, it's all right. I think that it was really strange seeing him throw about 40% cutters all of a sudden, really abandoning the changeup last game. And I'm the cutter guy. And also, that's a little weird because the changeup has been so effective against lefties. And he's just like, I'm going to throw these cutters, which were not really the best located ones. It was like middle up-ish and not inside as they normally would be. Anthony Molina is someone to be focused on, I think. I think the four-seamer at 96 or so with good vert is an interesting pitch that he's able to locate decently well. And then he has a slider and a curve. I believe it's a slider and a curve. Breaking pitches. He has 2 secondaries, one against righties, one against lefties. Actually, I think it's a changeup to lefties. Yeah, right. He's kind of like a mini Logan Henderson type. That's it. So I'm kind of curious to see how this goes with Anthony Molina. It is a good home park, of course. I'm not starting him against the Mets, but that's good again. And he is in Oracle Park against the Padres. That might actually be a stream next week. Matt Wilkinson also was a little interesting. Tugboat, the lefty, who's trying to, you know, be a high extension, low velocity swatch. So it's like Cody Bradford. Think about that. It's kind of what he's going for a little bit, maybe a little bit better, of course, with a little bit better stuff in there, but not really something I want to chase right now. Blade Tibble, I do not want to go after, guys. I don't think there's enough there. And Logan Webb, you just want to auto start. And oh my gosh, we did it. Not as short as we want, but shorter than usual, Eric.
Yes. Just a quick note on Anthony Molina, though, just because you brought it up. After this Padres start next week, it's St. Louis and Minnesota scheduled. Obviously, those things can change. But so if he looks good this weekend, then you could pick him up. And even if you choose not to use the Padres start, if the rotations hold, it would be two decent starts for him to end the season. So that's another feather in the cap for Anthony Molina. That's going to do it for us as we head into this Labor Day weekend. We hope that everybody enjoys their long weekend, enjoy baseball, enjoy family, enjoy barbecues, enjoy solitude and relaxation, whatever you're going to be doing. Enjoy it. I am Eric Smolsky, Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion, who'll be working on Labor Day to do the list.
I'll be working because, as my wife says, sports never sleeps.